choices you make with your lifestyle, your money, every single day, influence your future. It is time to fight to make it better. This podcast is dedicated to you, to sharing ideas that you can use to take ownership of your financial future. Most Americans have little or no net worth. By being purposeful with what we earn, I know we can change that, and we must change that. I want you to learn this game. I want you to be better educated about your money. I want you to live a better life. Welcome to Money is Personal, Briggs Financial Podcast. Let's go! Salutations, greetings, and hello! My name is Stephen Briggs. I'm chairperson and CEO of Briggs Financial Incorporated. Welcome to Money is Personal, episode number 162, Breaking the Sequence and Winning. When a lot of people have grown up, and I won't say all, because I think, you know, obviously we all have different experiences on this, but when growing up, especially going through a traditional schooling environment and so forth, there's kind of a program or a sequence that has kind of been enmeshed in society, really formally over the last 75 years, and probably less formally if you go back another 75 beyond that. And what this basically is, and I've heard it referred to as, you know, four phases or perhaps four stations of life. And in terms of how people develop, essentially, and carry out their existence. First, when you're very young and you're newly born, you're just starting to learn things. This is kind of the play phase of your life. So there's several years there where, yeah, you're probably learning things, or, you know, and even doing some classes, or, you know, you think about kindergarten or preschool or developmental kindergarten or whatever it is. But that's essentially the play phase of your existence. At some juncture, that play phase turns into more and more of a study. You're spending more time on homework, on books in school, and so on. And that work is becoming increasingly more focused and intense. And this is the learning phase of your life. And that could be going through high school, into college, or into a trade school, or whatever that is. But essentially, somewhere in that range, you go from play to increasing amounts of learning. And that's your kind of second station there. So first is play. Second is to learn the skills necessary to be a productive adult, to have a career, and so on and so forth. And that's where a lot of people get fed about, you know, things like home ownership and credit and stuff like that. You start getting some early preconceived notions of what success in your professional life might constitute. After this, you go through a period where most people say, okay, I'm an adult and I'm working and I'm paying bills, and maybe you have a family, maybe you don't, maybe you rent or you own your residence. This may be where you're investing and saving, whatever, but this is very much about career, working, producing, and living life in that mode. And then you get to a point where we don't do that anymore, where and most people have been fed that usually by 65, now 67 years of age, that is considered full retirement age, at which point you're done. That's it. The race is over. You don't need to work anymore. You kick back and you basically wait until you die. And so hang out, do what you want to do with that time, because some point you're going anyway. And that's basically it. Those are your four stations. You play, you learn, you work, you retire. And that's what we're basically sold the entirety, you know, and have been sold for a good chunk of our lives. And our parents and even our grandparents have had this sort of template in place. And that's what a good quality of life looks like. But the kicker is, this only goes to serve a certain portion of a population. And I say a certain portion because I can think of a number of things that kind of, you know, mess with this quite a bit. For example, how we experience learning can be very different from one person to another. Some people learn more rapidly than others. Some people aren't as interested in learning at one point of time as another. Many a dollar has been wasted sending an 18-year-old to college when they have no interest yet in learning whatever it is they're supposed to be learning at that level. And then they instead get an education in substances, maybe in dancing, maybe in a variety of things other than actual curriculars. So that doesn't mean that makes that person a bad student, bad kid, will grow up to have a bad adult life, far from it. But it clearly isn't necessarily the time for them to receive that information. And for a lot of people, I think, and we're finding increasingly for adults, is that, you know, what you wanted to do at 18 or 22 or whatever doesn't necessarily translate even a handful of years later, because the world is, changes very rapidly. And I think that's probably one of the biggest takeaways of the last, I'd say, even the last 50 years. We look at the computing era and the creation, destruction of jobs, technology, what is trending in culture, that cycle doesn't take decades anymore. It can happen in a year or two. And so with that sort of velocity, this idea that you're going to train for a career at 18, well, by the time you're 22, that career may have fundamentally shifted or changed in a profound way. And so what happens is that you end up being very focused on technical skills and abilities that may or may not be relevant by the time you get to the end of the race. And so what's happened for many, many people has been this sort of, notion that, okay, I'm going to go in and be in this career. Okay, that doesn't work out. And now there's this feeling of sort of defeat or failure or uncertainty. And this doesn't just happen early on in our careers. This can happen mid-career quite easily as well, where you're doing a job for several years and that job becomes increasingly obsolescent. Either computing has taken over, either robotics or artificial intelligence, or just simply that whatever it is that was being produced isn't as functionally relevant as there is. And there's, and I think that's something we're really starting to see among employers is a real recasting and sort of reevaluation of the workforce and what is needed for employment moving ahead. Well, when that happens, that means layoffs. And when that happens, that means you may be staring down being out of work. And so this whole model of play, learn, work, retire works really well if nothing comes in and disrupts it. But there are lots of things that can come in and disrupt it. Health events can disrupt it. Like I said, technology and market events can disrupt it. And that's happening at an increasing pace. So how do you approach this sequence when the sequence isn't working for you? Or if you just don't want the sequence to work at all? I would look at myself as a real example of this, where, you know, I went in and got degrees in education. I said, I'm going to be an educator. That was going to be my goal for 30 years plus, was to be a tremendous educator. And that would, I started, really thinking about that seriously since I was about 14 years old. I was a freshman in high school band, and I got to see my high school band director and the impact over several years from 14 to 18 that he had working with other students and seeing that those people change from into young, very capable people, over that stretch of time. And that was very attractive to me. So from 14 to 23, I was in learning mode. From 23 to 26, I was in teaching mode. And then the recession hit. And that recession very much shook up what the teaching profession would look like. Not just in terms of job security, which I had none. But on top of it, I mean, that fundamentally changed how teachers are going to retire or not retire. The state of Michigan, which was the state I was teaching in, you sat there and they changed their pension policy. there isn't going to be a pension anymore for us younger folks. It's going to be all in the 401k. Except who has money to contribute to a 401k when you're making next to nothing to begin with to be in the profession? And so I started to see very quickly that there is a hostility that was going to be reached between the education profession and a desire to live life, basically. Like, there just aren't going to be enough resources to make the ride fun. And at which point, not that you go into teaching for the money. I've yet to meet a teacher that has said, boy, I'm doing it for the big paycheck. But I could clearly see, even 3-4 years in my career, that what was happening was not going to be sustainable, was going to be very unfulfilling. It would require me to either take on a second job, or I needed to be in a profession that, frankly, could use my skills but pay me a whole lot better than what I was being paid teaching. And so fairly early on, I gathered that I would probably need to pivot and may have to pivot a couple of times, which, in fact, I can count 3 distinct pivots so far. And hopefully that'll be the end of it, because our firm's been around 6.5 years now, and I very much love what we do, even more than it's cliche to say every month or every year I fall more in love with what I do than the previous year, but it really is true for me. I've really found a thing I not only excel at, but I'm very passionate at doing what we do here at Briggs Financial. But it wasn't the first thing, or the second thing, or the third thing. And that's a very important, you recognize, well then, did you just fail at all the things you did prior? No, I don't think I failed at the things I did prior. But sometimes you have to try things in order to understand, does this work out or not? And so, if I was purely stuck on play, learn, work, retire, where is there room to move around when you've trained for a career and you're no longer in that career? Is that just it? Game over? That's it? I don't think so. And moreover, because of how quickly this creation destruction engine has, taken place, I think what that kind of forces, it gives us permission to look at, what about this work phase? Maybe we are thinking about this, we could think about this differently and maybe even think about this a little better, which is to say, why is work and learning and work, why are those separate? Why aren't learning and working kind of intermingled? Where you learn some, you work some, you learn some more, you work some more, you learn some more. And there are different ways to think about that. Number one, if you're within a career, I think it's essential, if you want to be competitive, if you want to be really good at what you do for a long period of time, I don't know how you do that and you're not constantly learning. I don't know how you're doing that, keeping up with it, on best practices and refining and honing that expertise. I don't know how you do that and not get feedback and learn and continue to educate yourself. So I think these things work in tandem regardless where your career heads. But I would also argue, who says you have to have one career? Who says you have to do one thing forever? Now you may say, well, Stephen, I've got bills to pay. And I go, yeah, I understand that. But by the same token, somewhere in that mix, maybe there's an opportunity. If there's something you want to pursue, you want to explore in that, well, maybe you're not throwing away the day job, but that doesn't mean you couldn't work on things that might lead you toward doing something else, whether it's in addition to or as a replacement of in the future. I mean, frankly, that's how when I started Briggs Financial, when I started as a planner, I didn't quit my day job originally. Before I was doing this, I was in the hobby gaming industry, running various conventions and events and tournaments for a game called Magic the Gathering. And I did that for the better part, really professionally, 5, 6, 7 years. I was in that industry for a decade. But even in 2017, 2018, as I was getting this firm off the ground, this wasn't the primary gig. I was working at it very hard, but the primary income was in the gaming industry. And it wasn't until late in 2018 where the revenues from the firm were, large enough to balance out against what I was seeing in the gaming industry, where it's like, okay, this is starting to make sense where I'm needing to put more time, energy, and mental resources behind this financial planning thing, and the scale shift as a result. But there was no, you know, there's no blueprint, there's no forced timeline there. It really came down to when did the data basically give me permission, i.e. when the money coming in gave me permission. And frankly, you know, not just that, I could feel myself when I was at a big event, I'm running this convention, going, I really want to be working on my financial planning clients instead. And it was when I had that feeling over and over and over again, combined with seeing the revenues increase, I said, you know, I have permission now to make that change. I can go ahead and start phasing out of the gaming industry, which I basically did over the course of a year, and focus 100% on this firm, which has worked out really quite nicely, I think. But this isn't my first experience. It's not my first experience in business. But what's interesting is, looking back on my background, a background in education, background in mathematics, and my formal education learning, a plethora of experiences that have involved teaching and coaching over the years, and a knack for being an entrepreneur and gaining those experiences. So after I was out of the formal classroom, I was in the private education space running a Sylvan tutoring center for nearly 5 years. And so that I got to combine some education, some entrepreneurial chops, but that actually started to inform how I would eventually begin to run this financial planning practice, how I would coach clients, how we would approach financial planning different from how they teach it in this industry. The way they teach it in this industry, it's gather all the information, make a big formal plan, hand your client a 37-page report with all these things and, you know, graphs and charts and to-dos, and call it a day and collect your paycheck. Except that doesn't act, you know, I know from learning theory, I know from teaching people, coaching people over 15 years, that doesn't work. It takes many exposures to a concept to achieve mastery. If we know that in learning theory, then why on earth do we think it's different for adults? It's different in the financial world. Well, it's finance, so it works differently. It does not. Turns out that learning thing's pretty universal. And that's where, I look and go, that teaching experience, that pedagogical experience, is literally formative of this relatively new platform and delivery of service that we've had enormous success with our clients with. And this isn't meant to advertise that point, but what the point is to drive in is those previous experiences have led to a much bigger and frankly better way, not just in terms of salary and what I earn, but also what I contribute to the world. This is satisfying. This is fun. It's challenging. It's tough. But it's fun. I mean, I wouldn't trade it. And I would go even so far as to say, you know, I think we've hit escape velocity and the firm will continue to do extraordinarily well for a long period of time. But if it didn't, if I said, if we were to go bust, what would you do? I'd say the next day, you know, one of my personal passions is cooking. I love to cook. I said, I'd be out there with a couple deep fryers and a smoker. I'd be smoking up some barbecue pork shoulder and doing some chicken sandwiches and some smash burgers. You can't get the entrepreneur out of me at this point. I'd find another way to be in business. I'd find another way to make money because I really enjoy serving people, serving them a high quality thing, whatever that high quality thing is, and being paid for it. I really like that a lot. But if I followed this play, learn, work, retire framework without any sort of bend, then I don't get to experience the joys and frankly the successes of being willing to have a more flexible mindset. Well, then how do you do that? Well, I think the first thing I really look at, I look at this as an employer, and I would advise you to look at this as yourself, is to look at, well, what qualities, not what degrees, not qualifications, but what qualities do I bring to the table as an employee? What am I really good at? From my vantage point as someone hiring, I want to tell this story here. When I was hiring our firm administrator, Alexis, about a year ago, prior to that, I knew Alexis for several months. She was working behind the bar at my local watering hole. And what was really cool in getting to meet her, I was always so impressed by her meticulous level of organization, how well she communicated with guests at the bar. She was very good at, you know, kind of, you know, making sure that clients, you know, that customers got a good, I say clients, customers at the pub got the beverage that they really wanted, and that the staff was kind of organized and working together as a team and communicating well. And I thought about this and thought about this. I went, wait, that'd be a really good person for a firm administrator. Because we've got a number of things going on at once. You got to be organized and diligent. You've got to communicate well with our clients. I'm like, so while Alexis didn't have any experience working in a financial firm, it was clear she had qualities that would make that would lend her to be potentially very successful in a role like that. And then when I started to, you know, ask about resume and that type of thing, found out that she, in fact, had some education in accounting and business, and had previous experience working at Best Buy in leadership, and saw all that and said, you know, there's a lot more, there's a, you know, a diamond in the rough here in the making, where it's a person with a ton of qualities that no one has really necessarily picked up on and said, there's a career here. Now the catch is you can wait and have a mad, you know, hopefully this wonderful experience with it, with random employer that finds you, but the odds on that aren't terribly high. What is more likely or what is more likely to be successful is for you to do that analysis and go, well, what do I bring to the table? And then start researching and thinking about, well, what jobs, what careers does that align with? When I hear about someone, for example, that's really good at multi, you know, in terms of balancing different tasks and priorities and communication and, you know, helping things, you know, maintain schedule and on timeness and resolving scope and issue, I'm thinking, gee, it sounds like a project manager to me. And there's a whole education and an aspect to what being that is, what leveling up in that is, and frankly, the six-figure paychecks that come when you have a combination of experience and that PMP endorsement. So then it's starting to look at, okay, apart from what qualities do I have and what things I could do, what education or what extra learning is needed to go do those things? And I obviously it can be very intimidating if the answer to that is a degree program, but in many cases it's not. Either because that there's some other training or certification course down the line or some examination that needs to be, but it's not necessarily you have to go and get a master's degree. You have to go back to college. But are you going to be learning? Yeah, you're going to be learning and taking courses and continuing to educate yourself. Because here's the catch at this point. I mean, the other thing about this play, learn, work, retire cycle, here's another reality. 100 years ago, 130 years ago, the average mortality age in the United States was under 50. 47, 48 years old. Today, that number is 78, 79, 80 years old. And that's if you're 65 now. If you're in a younger generation than that, you could be looking at an average, you know, mortality age at 85. If you're higher net worth, that could be as high as 90 or more. So this whole idea of of retiring at 65 was the idea that you'd probably die somewhere between 75 and 80 because lots of people are smoking and so forth. And that's just not happening anymore. People are living longer, and we're learning how to live even longer. I mean, we're going to have, if this trend continues, we may nearly have doubled our lifespan in the last 150 years, which is just mind-boggling to me. But what that means then is the money that would have been saved to hold on for you for the last 10 or 15 years now might have to last 25 years, 30 years, longer. And that's a very tough, it's not an impossible situation, but I do think it's a tough one. And I think it requires a whole lot more saving and a whole lot more preparation getting to that point and being able to pull that trigger. So much so that I think you're starting to look at not just a one career setup, but there's really room now in the math for two careers or even three careers, depending on how long or short you make your each phase of your career. For example, if you right after school, after high school, decided to go into the trades, by the time you hit age 42, age 43, you've been in your industry 25 years. By the time you hit age 38, you've been in it for 20. So whether you go and say, I do a 25-year career, and then at 43, say I'm going to pivot to something else. Maybe you go from construction to becoming a realtor. So you've built homes for decades, and now you're turning around and selling them. You know a lot about them, it turns out. That's a really neat pivot for you. And again, none of that requires a college education. Absolutely none of it. Now, would you benefit from education? Oh, heck yeah. Not just in terms of your trades during that phase, but before becoming a realtor. You think some quality time learning about financing and economics and personal budgeting and, oh, there's a number of things you could learn about in the market and so forth that you could learn about over a 2 or 3 year period. And now you're taking that builder expertise, that construction expertise, and levering it into a less impactful on the body, higher paying potential career there that you actually have a lot of knowledge in. So you can have one, two careers there. And at that point, you're retiring at 68, but you've had two completely different professional footprints there. If let's say you went down the college path, so you're graduating at 22, 23 with a bachelor's, maybe that first career gets you up to 47. And again, another 25 years, you're at 72, which is right around the time I think people will actually be targeting for retirement. If you're under 50 years of age right now, I think you're looking at a 70, 71, 72-year-old retirement, assuming you are saving money now and investing it and building retirement funding now. But again, the whole point on this is, I hope in this episode, and I know I'm getting lengthy on this, but it's to present that there are a number of different ways, a lot of different ways, that you can run this journey called life. And that for many people, it is not linear. It does not fit into this play, learn, work, retire. And how about play being somewhere in our lives today as well? I think that's another struggle is, why do I have to abandon play? Why can't I have play somewhere in the mix too? Well, depending on how you run things, you might be able to. I have clients that, you know, after a decent or long stint at a particular employer, they've built up a bunch of savings. Say, you know what? I want to take a year off. Maybe that year off is I want to spend more time with my family. That year off might be I want to go adventure and explore the world. Some of it might be I need to decompress because this last job was incredibly stressful. And they do that. Well, that's not in our model. It doesn't say play, learn, work, retire, work, retire, work, retire. It could. And that could lead to something far more successful than you just grinding out an office job. Yeah, you got the secure paycheck, but you're not, if you don't feel like you're living, then at some point it can feel like, well, what's the point of all of this? Other than being cog in the wheel to pay taxes, to fuel the industrial complex. And I get that. Well, then that may be a ripe opportunity to look at, how does one break the sequence then for myself? How do I look at this thing, you know, whether it's how I'm living my life or how I'm living my career life or whatever it is, how do I look at that differently? Can I use the qualities I have, not just qualifications, but the qualities and experiences I have, to do something different and to do something better, something more fulfilling, something that might pay me more? I think these are all great questions. And I hope that today's episode helps gets you to start churning through that, because that's something we do work with our clients on, is thinking about their how they're experiencing this thing in a variety of different, this life thing in a variety of different ways. And I think when you get a chance to look at it, you know, from that vantage point, and if you can remove the fear of what that is and just look at it, you know, purely with a sense of curiosity of what could I be doing, you might surprise yourself just what doors are actually open that while they may not be traditional, may very well be a much better fit for you than you could have ever imagined. And if you asked me a decade ago about starting a financial firm, I that was not in the cards. I will tell you that. Like, it was not until about a year after, you know, so about 9 years ago that I had even considered the notion of coming into the financial planning industry. Now we have a team of soon to be four people. We're, managing at this point $30 million in assets, and we serve hundreds of clients between financial planning, investments, taxes in over 20 states. That's crazy. If you told me I was going to do that 10 years ago, I'd look at you, I'd laugh. I'd be like, with what economics degree? What business background? Turns out, still have neither. And yet I was cited in Business Insider as being an economics expert for my research, for my work, because it turns out, smart. If you say some smart things because you're well-researched and you're well-thought, that does make you an expert. That does make you someone interesting to listen to and work with. And again, that would never have happened if I limited myself to, well, I don't have a degree in that. I guess I can't go do that thing. Well, I don't have a degree in that, but that doesn't mean I can't learn things. And if the problem's interesting enough, let's go tackle it. Has been my attitude. And here we are. And I don't know where this thing is all going, but boy, I'm enjoying the ride. I'm excited. We're all working hard. Our clients are doing well, and that's pretty sweet. But again, I had no clue that that was going to be a case a decade ago. But I was open to the idea that the tools and the skills I had could be repurposed in a very different way. And by being willing to do that, I was able to see how I could make a difference in the financial planning and the financial education and in the investment space. With that, I want to thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Money Is Her Personal. Make sure to check out our website, soon to be redesigned, finished, which will be really exciting, BriggsWealth.com. But do check out the website for all of our episodes, and make sure to, you know, if you're following us on a podcast platform, make sure to like, make sure to subscribe. We're on all sorts of platforms, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM. You can find us a lot of different places with this RSS feed. So make sure to subscribe. And thanks so much for listening. Have a great week. Be safe, be well, and we'll catch you with a fresh episode soon. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening to Money is Personal, the Briggs Financial Podcast. Please follow Briggs Financial on Instagram and Facebook for more terrific personal financial stories and ideas. And check out our firm's website at www.briggswealth.com to schedule a free consultation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. This information is provided for informational and educational purposes only. Briggs Financial believes the information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but does not guarantee the accuracy of the information being provided. This information is not meant to be a complete summary or statement of all available data for making financial or investment decisions, and does not constitute a recommendation. Please note that the information provided may include references to concepts that have legal, accounting, and tax implications. It is not to be construed as legal, accounting, or tax advice, and is provided as general information to you to assist in understanding the issues discussed. This information is not meant as a financial or investment advice pertaining to your personal situation. The selection of appropriate investment or planning options and/or strategies should be made on an individual basis after consultation with appropriate legal, tax, or financial advisors. Nothing contained herein is intended as a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any product or service mentioned, and they may not be suitable for all investors.